from Silicon Valley, over a cup of tea, a show about sharing perspectives and compelling experiences. And now, your host, Geeta Gupta, a technology entrepreneur and the first woman of Indian origin to take her company public.
Today, my guest is a calm, attentive, sharp, humble, engaging, and unusually disarming Barbara Tyler. She lives in Silicon Valley. She dominated the real estate residential market for 10 years, not just in the US, but the entire world, and then decided to retire at the peak of her career. She has assisted many tycoons of the Valley and Hollywood in their purchases. As a friend, Barbara agreed to be my first guest. So without further ado, welcome Barbara.
Thank you, Vinita. It's my pleasure to be here.
For the listeners, can you briefly describe who Barbara is, your family background, and where you grew up?
Well, Vinita, I grew up in Southern Oregon when Medford was actually a pretty small town. Grew up in a home with two siblings. My mom and dad were what one would say blue-collar workers. I was the first in my family to go to college, and I went to Southern Oregon College, which was 11 miles away from home. And the only reason my family could afford for me to go was my best friend had a car and could drive me back and forth to college. So I started out in Southern Oregon, and I then became a teacher. So that's a fast forward. But I grew up in Southern Oregon, humble beginnings, really.
From the modest beginning, in retrospect, you became a real estate agent. How did you make that leap?
Well, I think the best way to answer that question is to summarize two careers. So my first career was in education, and I was a teacher and then became a vice principal of a school. Then I was asked to be a coordinator of a federal project that integrated special education and children into the regular classroom. I got my master's in special ed. Then I went to the State Department and became a consultant to school districts. And I traveled around the state, and I knew a lot about best practices in education. So your question, how did I go from Southern Oregon to real estate career? The transition really was through education. And I thought that I was going to open a private school. And that was my goal. And I thought, you know, I think I'll open, maybe I'll lease the space of a school district that had declining enrollment. And I could set up my own school on a campus. Or I would go into a corporation and set up a kindergarten to third grade school right on the in a corporation. So I went from that to seeing that I needed to know more about real estate before I could do that. So I studied real estate. Yeah.
Were you trying to save money so that you could, you didn't have to pay real estate fees if you ended up buying something?
Well, I wasn't that clever, Vinita. No, I wanted to know enough about real estate that I could make a good investment if I was going to open a private school. So I thought I would get my real estate license and study it. And then I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I relocated from Sacramento, where I was living, to the Bay Area, which I thought would be a better location for me for a private school. And then I thought, well, I'll just sell real estate for maybe 6 months, figure out values, figure out how leases work and loans work. And then I loved it, fell in love with that. And then for 20 years, I was in real estate.
So you decided, you chose first Menlo Park as the town where you were going to, or you were dreaming of opening the school, because you like the feel of the town? What? And you still live in Menlo Park.
We do. My husband and I live in Menlo Park. When I was in the State Department, you're assigned a territory. And my territory was San Mateo County. And I loved Menlo Park when I was there visiting the schools. It just felt like a small enough town in a suburban area, more comfortable for me. Felt more like Medford.
So Menlo Park is a small town. Still, it's a small town.
Yes.
And it is next to Palo Alto, which most of the listeners are going to know more so about.
Correct. Correct.
So tell us a bit more about what got you hooked in real estate. You obviously gave up the dream of running a school at that point in time.
Correct.
So there must be a catch to it.
You know, I found early on that I think the qualities that you have as a teacher are pretty easy to transfer over into being a good salesperson.
Such as?
Listening, caring, breaking things down into small pieces so people can understand and be empowered to make better decisions. So those skills were transferable. I like people. I liked kids. I like people. And so that made it more natural for me. And then I found that I just loved it. I found a lot of satisfaction meeting a family and then helping them get into a home. So I got passionate about it, Vanita. I liked it. I found it challenging. And I felt it was a way for me to serve and utilize my skills.
A lot of listeners would be interested in knowing that if a couple came to you, they don't necessarily agree upon what they are looking for. That means husband and wife may not be on the same frequency. How did you deal with those situations?
Well, it's a very real question because the dynamic in a family is very complex when they're buying or selling a house. And particularly the interaction between, if there is a marriage involved, there is an interaction between the husband and wife and who's the decision maker. And yet, if the husband usually decides about finances and the wife doesn't like the house, there's a struggle. So I found myself being empathetic, a good listener, and a good negotiator to say this is important to one, this is important to another, and then I'd look to see then if there was a house that would fit both of their needs and fit their family style. So it took a lot of intuition, listening, and then sometimes almost like a marriage counselor.
So just as a final point,
yes,
you chose not to choose between husband or wife, depending on who the decision maker is, but to give them the pros and cons in matter-of-factly way. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's right, and also in a respectful way. Sometimes couples can't hear what each other's saying, and I might be the interpreter back and forth, and then listen to see what would be the new residential change that would make it a better situation for them.
How did you move from smaller deals to a bigger deals? In your opinion, what might have led to that? And then my next question would be, when you moved to doing bigger deals, you must have come across some tycoons of the valley. If you might want to disclose who they might be.
Well, those are loaded questions, Vanita. Okay. But first of all, you know, how does one in any profession go from the beginner level to a more elite level? And it takes time. I would position myself to hold open houses of someone else's listing that I didn't have, but in a higher bracket, and get to know people in the community to get comfortable. I think you have to get comfortable in a higher price range and also have better marketing materials and know the market really, really well. A lot of things happen outside of the MLS, the multiple listings. So you need to know what's going on so you can offer advice to people. So over time, I moved myself up in the price range.
So just for clarification for people who may not know, so a buyer and seller, they may have the same real estate agent or they may have two different real estate agents. And do the commissions get split 50-50 between the two?
The question about who represents a buyer and a seller is a very good one, and I think it's a personal real estate agent's decision. Legally, as an agent, I could represent both buyer and seller. I rarely did that for my own ethics. I wanted, if you're a seller, I wanted you to know I represented only you. I would help bring in buyers, but I would find someone else to represent the buyer. If you were a buyer, I would show you my listings, but then if you wanted to buy normally, I would then have someone else represent you. So I liked separating just so you could trust me to know you're just my agent.
Do you think other real estate agents did the same thing?
A few do, and many want to represent both. It economically means more money, but it also can mean a conflict of interest.
Let's move to some of the high-profile people who became your clients. How did they find out about you, or did you find them?
Well, I'm proud to say, or glad to say, that over the years, I developed a reputation. And my reputation was, I do believe, or what I heard from others, people knew they could trust me. They also knew that I knew their market. I knew the higher market really well. I knew what was coming on the market, et cetera, and what values were. So wonderfully and happily, my phone rang with people actually calling me, and I was honored to represent them. 85% of my business toward the end of my career was people calling me, would you please work with me, versus my trying to track them down or get their attention. Now, in answer to your question about who I worked with, I'll just go backwards and say that one time I got a call from Oprah Winfrey's office, and she, her staff member asked me, we understand that you represent a lot of the people in Atherton, and there have been newspaper articles about how expensive the properties are. Could you tell us who the people are that are buying these expensive houses, and could you get us in so we could do a show on some of the who's famous in Atherton? My answer was, I respect my clients' privacy. They buy their houses for their homes and for their families and not for public airing. With that said, there have been three of my clients that I have publicly talked about, so I can say three of them for fun and because I enjoyed it. Certainly one was representing John Scully. I really enjoyed working with he and his wife and represented them on three different properties in Woodside. And then I was very honored to get a call one day from Charles Black, who was married to Shirley Temple Black, and totally enjoyed representing them and getting to know Shirley Temple. What an honor that was. And then a funny story. You have to know the background a little bit. We had a friend, my husband's friend, who would sometimes call our home and say, and he'd pretend, he'd use kind of fake voices and pretend he was a wealthy person moving here from China, or he was a high tech guy. And, you know, is Barbara Tyler there? I want to work with her. Well, my phone rang, and it would always be our friend Tim calling my husband, but teasing me. So one day the phone rings at my home and I say, good morning. And the other voice on the other end of the line said, hi, this is Steve Jobs. And I thought it was our friend Tim teasing me. So I said, Steve Jobs, right, with sarcasm. And the voice said, yeah, this is Steve Jobs. So back to your question, it was an honor to work with so many wonderful people. I respect their privacy, but it was wonderful that through word of mouth they came to me.
In the later stage of your career, you said people had started calling you.
Correct.
What did you do to market yourself?
I think it's important to brand yourself and what you represent. name recognition. When I started in our area, which would represent four towns, there were over 500 realtors. So how, I asked myself, how could the public know that Barbara Tyler was a realtor versus someone else being a realtor? So I worked on my advertising, looking at what name recognition items I might be able to market. Now, I can give you some examples in a minute. But I think the other thing then is marketing your properties that you represent in what I wanted to be the most beautiful, whether we had aerial shots of it so that it represented it the best. But I wanted visually, when people saw the marketing materials for my properties that I listed, they were a step above. And I was always looking for new ideas for marketing. When my husband and I might take a small trip, let's say to Southern California or Texas or New York, before I went, I would contact the top producing agent of that area. I would ask for a 30-minute time with them to share marketing ideas. I would bring a packet of things with me of marketing that was leading, whether it was mine or someone else's in the Bay Area, and find out what they were doing to get new ideas. So I came back from these trips motivated with new ideas on how to, again, distinguish what I was doing in my practice and how to promote my properties in a way that they sold. Then my clients were really satisfied. We gave them high levels of service, was my goal. And then the phone would ring.
So what were some of the ideas that you got by visiting other people?
Well, it's totally a common practice now, but it was not when I began in real estate. And that is that I got an idea from Southern California about putting your own photo in the newspaper. Now the newspapers should be writing me a thank you note and the magazines, because the pages are filled with realtor ads in which they have their photo and then the pictures of the properties. Do you know that that was not done?
So the time you started it,
yes,
it was not done.
Not done. So I was the first one in our area here to say, I'm marketing a property, da-da-da, in Menlo Park, and my picture was in it versus just the company's name. Also, the mailings in the homes. Very few realtors at that time did mailings into the homes. And so I did that. I would actually hand write the envelopes until I finally got a marketing person and they could mail them out efficiently. So mailings were something that I did. Client dinners, appreciation dinners, no realtor had done that. I also had a lot of news coverage during my career. Some of that came from the New York Times calling Coldwell Banker to say, I want to talk to someone. Yes, it went through that. But the local newspapers, Benita, I was very fortunate. I don't know how many over the last 5 years of my career, but multiple articles in which I would receive calls from the Mercury News, the Chronicle, the local newspapers, ask, Barbara, can you tell us what's happening in the market? So news media.
So you became a consultant to people. You became a brand name first, then you were being called to give advice on real estate,
yes,
or what was happening in the market.
That's correct.
Now the marketing is no longer traditional marketing, but more like social media marketing. So in real estate business, how is that changing?
Well, I think it's an important avenue for reaching people and communicating about properties or even yourself. So if I were in the business now, I would be using social media for sure.
You almost retired at the peak of your career. Was it a grand plan, or you just decided that was it?
I did retire at the top of my career, and had I continued it, I'm sure it would have escalated and I would have sold a lot more properties. But I made a decision actually 5 years before I retired that I wanted to go out at the top. I looked at a lot of realtors who were just all worn out. Sometimes their marriages had fallen apart. Their health was sacrificed. And I asked myself, when is enough enough? Also, I looked at what I value. I loved real estate. I never retired because I didn't love it. I loved my clients. I loved the challenge. I loved new things. I really passionate. I know that there's more in life. And one of the things I wanted to do, Vanita, is I wanted to have more time to give back to the community. I wanted to be sure my marriage was not in trouble, but I wanted to have more time with my wonderful husband and my family. And I just decided my career was at such a pace that I couldn't just turn the spigot down, that people were coming to me by referral. I didn't want to disappoint them. So I could see that it was I need to graciously step out. And I worked for the last 2 years of my career to turn my career over to Tom Lemieux. I brought him on, trained him, so that when I did say, I'm going to walk out the door now as a full-time realtor, I could do that and have a place, safe place for my clients.
So quite a planned transition.
That's correct.
12 months after you retired, did you still feel you made the right decision?
Well, it was hard. I don't think that retirement is ever easy. It's the way you define yourself. It's the way you plot your day and your life. So I felt a void for a while, and yet I knew that time to create and to think about what I might do next would flow. And so it was okay with me, Vanita.
And it did.
Yes, it did.
I was quite intrigued how you went back to your first love, teaching at Wanda.
Yes.
Please tell us about it.
Well, shortly after I retired, one of my past clients asked to get together, and she brought two of her friends. And they, these three women from Palo Alto, who started an organization called Wanda, and they were just starting it. It was for single mothers at or below the poverty level to see how they could empower them. And they came with no real agenda other than, Barbara, you're retired now, kind of nudge, nudge, what might you do for these women? And one of the things I said is, years ago when I was in education, I had training in goal setting and time management. And I used that training when I went into real estate. And early on in my career, I even gave classes to realtors on how to set goals and manage their time until I got so busy I couldn't do that. So I said to them, I do have some training and knowledge in goal setting and time management. They were just like a light bulb went off, and they said, that's it. So would you help train these women? And so it's been about 10 years now that I've been working with this program called Wanda, helping single moms. And it's just been so rewarding to see them, their eyes open, have more hope and more excitement about their life, and be able to systematically plan for a better future for themselves.
When you say goal setting and time management, to single moms who obviously were struggling both on the financial end and perhaps on personal end, so what sort of goals were you urging them to set? And the second part of the question, of course, is about time management, which all of us can use.
Goal setting begins with a question for yourself. What are you passionate about that you want to see happen in your life in 1 to 3 years? And for the women in the class, it could be different things. It could be getting out of debt. It could be getting a better job. It could be getting their kids through a certain level of education, etc. So look at what they're passionate about and then help them to reword that in a way that they really can see a bigger picture. And their faces change when they get that statement for themselves. Then set goals. Because I think if you don't know what you're going to be passionate about, what you really want to go for, setting goals are like New Year's resolutions and you probably won't do them anyway. So they get a goal or a passion that they can be excited about and see themselves, and then they will be able to set goals.
So explain, why is it not like New Year's resolution?
It's very different, Vanita, because if, for example, one of my, going to myself, not the women at Wanda, but if one of my passions in life is to be vital and fit, then I can have goals about getting myself to the gym.
As opposed to?
I should work out. When you put a should or I want to or I hope to, you probably won't do it. But when you see that, let's just say at the end of this year, I want to be even more vital and fit, I see myself that way. You're likely to do it. When you word it in a way that you see or you're excited about, or in this case with the Wanda Moms, I will celebrate with my children when I paid off all my debts this year. Then they can set goals about how much to spend every month. Then they can set a goal to talk to their children about what they need to save and then the rewards that they'll be able to give the kids. So it's when you get excited about something, then you can do a plan that you'll do.
Very well said. Time management.
Yes.
What would be your advice in general for time management?
Easiest thing, A's in the AM. So your A priority items, if you get them done in the morning, you'll have a much better day.
Does it happen every day?
No. But certainly, you know, how to use to-do lists effectively and to prioritize and then to set up blocks of time for personal time, etc. So there are tips in time management, but the easiest one, A's in the AM.
Barbara, you recently had your first amazing teaching session at San Mateo County Jail, which you described as meeting young women all dressed from head to toe in orange. Can you talk about it a bit?
This has been the most interesting new chapter in my life, and we'll see how it plays out. I've gone to jail now 3 times. And I have to tell you, every time I say to my friends, I'm going to jail this weekend, they're like, what? But it came from one of the Wanda women that had taken my goals class. And she let me know that she was volunteering in the jail to help the women because she used to be a drug and alcohol person herself. And she now volunteers there. So she asked me to go with her. And I've been 3 times now, and it's fascinating, and I think it's maybe one of the most rewarding things I've ever done, to see their faces,
so
have some more hope.
So who are these women?
They're women who are incarcerated in the county jail, usually because they couldn't pay bail, or they're waiting for a court trial. And they sign up for this program called Options, in which they get extra training that they show to the judge when they do go to court. And they get extra credit, if you will, for attending these classes about making better choices when they get out.
So these women are... addicts, and they also have young children or child?
I wasn't given and will never be given a screening of their names or why they're there for their privacy. However, from the conversation, I can say there was 12 women sitting in a circle. Their ages range from 20 to 50. They were different ethnicities. And as they talked about what their goals were or what they were hoping for, you could assume that many of them or most were there because of addiction problems. There may have been other circumstances that I wasn't aware of. Many of them shared that they had children. One of their biggest sadness, and they would cry sometimes saying, I just want to get custody of my children again. I want to get clean so that I can be back with my children. Or they're crying and sad because they know they really hurt their children. So that's the culture that I was speaking with in these classes.
So how did you decide what to tell them in your session?
Well, it wasn't easy. The first time I went, I literally said I would just sit in on the class to try to figure out what the needs were of these women, because I had no idea coming in from the outside. And so then the second time that I went, I offered to teach them an hour's time with them. And what I've been using are quotations to then draw out conversation with them to help with what are some lessons of life that they might look differently at. For example, one of the quotations that they responded to a lot and talked, they sometimes don't want to talk at all. They'll kind of stare at the floor. But when I gave them the quotation, show me your friends and I will show you your future, they were like, yeah, yeah. That brought out amazing things from them, Vanita, about who they hang out with. And when I get out, I realize I need to make some different choices. I need to go with some different people. Or women who said, this is my third time here. You know, I get back into the same group and I get into trouble. So then you can take that and look at who would be your support people when you get out this time. Where is there some support for you? What would be worth it for you to make some new changes for yourself? And those quotes had them more positive reaction into what they could do for themselves.
So can you describe how you use that hour with them?
Well, one of the things that I did the second time, the first time was to try to get them comfortable with me. The second, and they weren't at first, by the way. They kind of stared at the floor like, who is this lady coming in here? And they would mumble at me. And then I got them to open up by using some quotes and what did the quote mean to them and et cetera. Well, the second time that I went in, I drew a picture of a baseball diamond and then I put three quotes on the left of it. And one of the quotes was, you can't be what you can't see. And so I asked them the question, what would be a home run for you when you get out 1 to 2 years from now? You round the bases, and what would be a home run for you? And so they talked about things like paying off their debts or taking care of their legal matters, getting housing, safe housing. So we put those on the blackboard, the whiteboard, about what would be a home run for them, and then ask them to reword that in a positive way so that they could be passionate about it and it could be one of those things that they would keep in their mind when they got out. And I loved what the women had to say. There were three women that volunteered at the end of my hour, and one said, I see myself completing a recovery program and getting custody of my kids, and I will feel worthy and accomplished. Now, those are the words of an inmate who said that. And when I walked in the door, what I saw was women who did not feel worthy, who felt such shame. And you could just see the change in her face when she said, I see myself completing a recovery program and getting custody and feeling worthy. Another woman said, I will feel proud and grateful when I can maintain balance and a full-time job and be a mother. And the third totally tickled me. This was a woman who had been pretty resistant to talking much and sat with her arms folded and her head down, and she was overweight and kind of filled her chair from side to side. And so I asked her what her goal would be, and her answer was what her vision would be 1 to 2 years out. And she said, you know, pay off her debts. Well, then as I worked with her some more, this is what she finally came up with, and it was just wonderful. I will celebrate with my children as I remain clean and sober and save money so we can do funner things. Funner. And it just tickled me. And I said, funner things? She said, yeah, funner things with my kids. And I said, would you mind, because she was kind of mumbling it to the floor, I said, would you mind, could I ask you to stand up and kind of say that to everyone else? And so she kind of rolled out of her chair and stood up, and she said, with a lot of volume that surprised me and everyone else, I will celebrate with my children, etc. And everyone applauded.
Beautiful.
Now, these are women who were totally introverted and not a group, and they applauded her. So, for me, how rewarding is this to reach even one person to give them more hope and see themselves in a different light?
So her posture must have been very different when she sat down.
Totally. And everyone was smiling. We were in a room with a glass, and you could see the sheriff at the other end of the hallway, and he was keeping an eye on us. And I don't know what he thought, but here were all these women applauding and cheering. And these were women who were incarcerated.
That was so beautiful.
Now, at the end, I just have to tell you, Vanita, I finished my hour, and they actually gave me enthusiastic applause. I was totally surprised, instead of like, yeah, thanks, and we're out of here now. And then several of them said, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And I said, let's see, I'll be back in October. When? Because I want to be here. And that made me laugh. It was 3 weeks later, they still want to be in jail. So I'm not sure I set the right expectation for them, but I will be going back this Saturday for my third lesson with these women. And some will still be there, and some will be new.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to it?
Totally. I find myself waking up thinking, how can I break these concepts down into small, inspiring steps so that the women can take them away with them?
If I may,
yeah.
What is your goal with these women?
Really, I don't want to be unrealistic that I'm going to be able to help them with their long-term plan. That's not it, Vanita. It's truly to give them hope and to hopefully have them feel more worthy, their own words, and have them have more courage when they get out to walk away from things that are negative and toward things that will help them in the future.
Thank you very much, Barbara.
Please share the podcast to spread the message.